Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sri Devi, who is here to fit in as much of the amazing news about the girls and their education in the girls program as we can possibly fit into 10 minutes. Welcome, Sri Devi.
Hi, Jen.
Hey. There's a lot to tell, huh?
Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about. It's been a very exciting 4 or 5 weeks.
It really is. Where should we start?
Oh, well, I think what, people may know this, but, just talking about the expansion of the girls program and what's happening now, we have 51 girls in the program, which is incredibly exciting, ranging from grades 1 all the way through grade 12. And being able to work with the girls at different stages, I think really is going to allow us and the community so much opportunity to really see what happens when girls are supported from day one to get educated.
Yeah. I mean, we, as I'm sure you'll talk about, we had a fabulous conversation with Teresa this morning. And you know, it's funny because we've been looking at it in the way that you're talking about. Okay, yeah, grade ones, and we've got some grade fives, and we're doing this with these girls, and we're doing that. So I confess, it wasn't until this morning that I even thought to add it all up, and 51 girls. And that's not even including everyone who we also have some scholarships out to women, young women, who are not directly part of the program but are daughters of some of the cooperative members. So it's even a larger number than that. So it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And so we did have an opportunity to talk to Teresa this morning. Our girls are all back in school. Studies have commenced. And we're hearing amazing things in just the first 2 weeks. So I think I'm going to, that's going to be my cue to you to share the wonderful story Teresa told us today.
Okay, great.
Oh, sorry. Should I tell it or do you want to tell it?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I thought you said that's where you were going to start, that you're please do. Absolutely. So you, please do.
So we were talking with Teresa, and we said, well, how are the girls doing? How are they, because the grade ones are really young. They're probably 6, 7 years old. They have to get on a bus and go to their school. You know, it's a very different environment for them. And Teresa said they're doing incredibly well. Our grade fives are doing very well. And in fact, one of our grade 5 girls, Miriam, is now the class monitor or the captain of the class. And it turns out that all of the girls were given a test. I guess I'm assuming the entire grade or in the entire class. And Miriam got 100% and was elected the class monitor. And so when we first heard that, we were like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. But then Teresa said something that was even more powerful, that she has – oh, I mean, we could talk about how amazing Teresa is as we do, but even more so, she has a direct line to the director of TWABO, where the grade 5 girls are. And whenever anything is happening, whenever, information needs to be shared, he knows that he can call her directly or she can call him, which I think is just so important here to underline the critical nature of that relationship. But the director told her that he could not believe just in the first couple of weeks of our grade 5 girls going to TWABO that they were doing so well and that they were surpassing the kids from the more wealthier, affluent homes, and that how proud he was of them. And that was just, that was huge.
I got goosebumps again. I mean, it really is incredible. And just to give people a tiny bit of background, some folks who have been tracking along for many years will remember years ago when before we even had the building was built, any of that, we were just a tiny little, just starting out. And we had a focus group with a number of people in the community. And one of the things they told us is that there aren't any schools in Cantaloma. There's actually, since that time, there's one small elementary school that's been built, but most of the kids go out of Cantaloma to go if they're going to school. And they were telling us how the kids in Cantaloma get teased, of course, right? Kids teased. Mm-hmm. And they're poor. And Cantaloma was never designed to be an official community. It's on the grounds of a huge cemetery, one of the biggest cemeteries in Indola. And so it's basically a squatter community. And so the kids would be teased and called ghosts when they were at school. You know, among the more, you know, affluent is not really a word you can use, but, you know, kids who are less poor. And so I think one of the things that's taken everyone at TWABO by surprise is, I mean, they've all been so sweet and so kind right from the start. And I think in their minds, they're thinking, okay, yeah, yeah, we want to pitch for these kids who are really underprivileged, which is a big piece of what happened when we first started bringing those kids last year, right? We brought in grades 7s and 8s and 9s, and they were way, way, way behind. So the TWABO teachers had a big job on their hands. But these grade 1s and these grade 5s, that's what I think has blown the whole community of TWABO away, is they're like, wow, these girls are actually the top of their class, because these are the girls who have been primed in the that English education program that Sister Phil started years ago since they were tiny. So it's thrilling.
It is. It's incredibly exciting to hear that. And as we talked about earlier, if, you know, our grade 5 girls, as you mentioned, were in Sister Phil's program, they did specific education, English education programs. But now to imagine, if that's the experience that our grade 5 girls are having, or that other people are having our grade 5 girls, what's going to happen with our grade 1 girls who are starting off like that, who is going to be their default, going to be their environment? And it's just, I think it's so exciting to see that, but also to take a moment to say, we have 4 girls in college right now.
I know, then way on the other end of the spectrum. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, and Teresa went to visit them this weekend to check up on them, to see how they were doing. They're doing very well. You know, Sylvia and Miriam have been there. This is now their second semester. Rachel and Esther, for people who followed along with the blog, just started and have joined them. They all are staying in the same housing situation, and I believe they're all in the same room, which is really exciting, because now we have the ability where for Esther and Rachel to get that mentorship and that guidance for Sylvia from Sylvia and Miriam, who kind of know what to expect in, you know, the first semester. And I have to tell you that Teresa sent a picture of the 4 of them, and wow, I mean, they look like these incredible young women who are just I can't even think of the right adjectives, but it was just so beautiful to see what I project, an incredible confidence, strength, and joy on these young women's faces. And I also project that, and we talked about this a little bit, Teresa, that they understand the responsibility that they're carrying being the first graduates and going to college. And so there's so much there to even just talk about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, Teresa did underline that, because we were, Rachel and Esther haven't had any testing or exams. It's been too, you know, they haven't been there long enough. And we were joking slash not joking, saying, okay, Teresa, are you talking to them? Are you on top of it? She's like, oh, you know, I'm exactly what you said. I'm just really, they get it, that they have dozens of eyes, little girls' eyes on them, that everyone is looking up to them. And that the community, the wider community, is looking at them, that there's a way in which Living Compassion is really putting itself on the map with all of these girls, these grade 1s, these grade 5s, the girls in college, all of them. They're really, you know, shifting attitudes for themselves, for the community, for how the wider community sees Cantaloupe. I mean, there's so much transformation happening. And as you say, Teresa is just supporting them like crazy. And I think that's one of the things that really, you know, at the same time that she's saying to Rachel and Esther, all right, gals, you know, you got to really pitch here, they also know they've got a whole huge community of people who love them behind them and are ready to, you know, if they're struggling academically, great, let's talk about it. What do we need to do? We'll get in the support we need to get in.
Yeah. And so that's kind of also the next set of conversations we're having is, you know, we're in a different environment with school now. So one of the unique things that kind of happened over these last 4 or 5 weeks is almost all the girls are at 1 of 3 places, and the majority of them are at 2 schools, TWABO and Zora. And what's really great about that is it allows, I think, Teresa to, and the community and the teachers to build more direct relationships. They can just go to two places. The girls have a support circle within their own environments. But what's also wonderful about these schools is they're in school all day. And some of these other schools that the girls had been in before, it would maybe only be 2 or 3 hours. And then, you know, they would knock off, which is the phrase of essentially they'd come home. And so they weren't really getting a lot of classroom time. But I believe the girls are pretty much in school now from 8 to 16 hours, so 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. nonstop. So one of the next things that we're going to be looking at the program is how do we support the girls who are in school full-time, essentially, Monday through Friday? What is it like when they come to the property on Saturday? How do we engage with them? What are the things we want to focus on? And so that's also really exciting to kind of go, oh, as this is changing, as the model is changing, as we have more girls in the program and the type of schools they're in are different, how do we then need to adapt and change in order to support the girls, as you said? How do we support the college girls, you know, our grade 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 girls, and our grade 1 and grade 5 girls?
Yeah, God, that's really well put, Sridevi. I just was seeing as you were saying that, just, you know, when we first started in Cantalumba, I mean, education wasn't even on our radar screen because these kids were starving literally to death. Malnutrition was the top. I mean, we, you know, kids were dying dozens, you know, every year. And so, you know, we needed to get clean water in there. We needed to get health, basic health care. We needed to get health awareness in there. We needed to get nutrition in there. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, that basic kind of a level. And then, you know, somewhere around, I don't know, 10 years or so ago, that started to be there. That was, okay, we've got it. You know, we're not losing kids. We're not, we've got clean water. We've got, and then we could turn our attention to education. Well, I mean, I don't think I had any idea when we turned our attention to education how big of a feat that was. And we were just saying to Teresa actually this morning, you know, just thank you to all of us, just kind of deep gusto to all of us, that for a lot of years, it could feel like, oh, we're kind of treading water here. We're kind of spinning our wheels. But we just hung in there and hung in there and hung in there. And boy, are those seeds really popping up. And I feel like what you're saying is, as those things are ready, it now frees us to look at, okay, now what's the next level of support? And what's the next possibility? And what's the next? And it's just extraordinary to watch it build on itself so naturally in that way.
Yeah, and you know what just dropped in as you were saying that, Jen, was how beautiful this practice is in the guidance that it allows of not making assumptions of really being present to what is, because what has been true every year as things change, you know, and as girls advance more, we're learning new things every year about the schools, about fees, about terms, about what's required, and Teresa's discovering it, and we're discovering it. Yeah. So there's still a lot to learn. And to your point, it could seem very, at times it's like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that that had happened, or I didn't realize that that had changed. And what's possible is there's such an openness to be open to all of it. Like, okay, oh, well, that piece of information came in. Well, how do we want to do with that? And it's always with the spirit of inquiry, which is so lovely. Just that genuine, true spirit of inquiry has really supported, I think, so much of this project, at least from my experience, what I've experienced.
Yeah. It's why there's no substitute for time. You know, that menu in Johannesburg again. Attention is the purest and highest form of generosity, and I would say love. And I think there's no substitute for the fact that we have now been on the ground for 13 years. Wow. There's no substitute for that because you just laid out so perfectly, insight needs experience, and it takes that experience.
Yeah.
So I can't believe it, but we are actually past our time. Is there anything else you must, we'll put it this way. I know there are lots of things you want to add in. Anything you feel like you must add in before we end?
No. Well, actually, just one thing I guess I would say, but the transformation is happening. It's amazing. And just deep gratitude to every single person in Sangha, around the country, around the world, who supports this project. We're seeing it firsthand. I hope you all see it when you read the blogs or see the photos that are published every week. It is happening, and it's quite amazing.
Thank you for making that connection, because that's a lovely connection with the success of the 2018 campaign has now funded everything we're talking about. So, we're truly doing it together. Well, speaking of together, thank you, Sridevi, deep
thanks,
Kesho,
Jen,
for everything you do for this project.
Thank you, Jen.
Okay. Thanks for being with us. Good night.
Good night.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Sridevi. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
Really good. Really good. Yeah. That was such an amazing conversation.
Yes, it was great. I could, as I was listening, I could feel my mind expand and take in all of the work and everything that everyone's doing, and those girls who are leading the way. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It's such a practice place where that program requires such a level of paying attention to detail.
Yes.
You know, tracking every child, tracking their progress. It's an amazing process to participate in and to stay in the – and I think what makes that successful is to stay in the energy of the transformation while tracking all those details. It's quite mind-boggling to see the spreadsheets that Sridevi keeps in order to track everybody, truly.
Yeah, and I can only project that it's received with love that someone is tracking me and cares about me and wants to make sure that my fees are paid and that I have this thing I need and the other thing I need, and they know that my family, this is what's going on with my family, and it's incredible.
Yeah, it's an amazing interconnectedness, you know, because Teresa does the same thing with every child on the property. It's amazing how Jen can recognize the faces, and it we talked about this a little bit during the campaign, but it's really about love, because if you love something or someone really, really deeply, you really know them, you know? It's not something from memory. This is a relationship that's recalled and nurtured and given, and attention is a way of doing that.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think it was Jen saying at the end there that attention is love, essentially.
Yeah. Everybody counts. Everyone is counted. And that creates an energy that's tremendous. Anyway, I'm sure you have some announcements for us, Michael.
I do. Our year-long retreat on making a change for good will offer training to be aware of attention on a conversation in conditioned mind. By applying this to content with which we suffer, finances, health, relationship, and so on, we'll learn to move from looking through conditioned mind to looking at conditioned mind. The retreat includes daily assignments and a weekday radio show. March is a beautiful time to be at the monastery, and it has been designated as a month of quiet, intentional focus on practice. If you have ever been a visiting monk, you are welcome to come for any length of time, a week, 2 weeks, or the whole of March, for this visiting monk intensive. Please email monastery-retreats@livingcompassion.org for more information or to reserve a place. And bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks at an at-home working meditation retreat on March 23rd. The day includes exercises, virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods. Gain some helpful insight into family karma at a retreat with Sherry and Ashwini in North Carolina, April 15th through 20th. The retreat will include yoga, meditation, and guidance with Sherry. Step away from the pressures of day-to-day living and immerse yourself in a monastic community on waking up at the Your Practice Retreat, May 4th through 11th, at the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy, California. The retreat offers individualized support with what you choose as your practice focus for your stay. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders, Ashley, for our callers today. If you'd like to get in the queue and make a show, you can press *6 and then 1. In a conversation that lasts about 5 minutes and that's focused on one topic is really helpful. Okay, Ashwini, you ready to get started?
Absolutely.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jennifer from Virginia.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you, Michael and Ashwini? I'm
good.
Surprised.
Good.
I was a little bit in a trance from the beginning of the call, listening to all that wonderfulness. So I was a little surprised. This is a jolt, woke me up.
Yeah. So what's going on?
Well, the update before the call was I guess very similar to what I have going on. I'm founded a nonprofit and have an event coming up, and I've been finding myself very stuck in conditioning with expectations about the event and frustrations and just a lot of being stuck in a lot of conditioning. And so what I really heard in the beginning with the update was, you know, that things take time and to be present and to feel like it's guiding you. So I feel like I got a little bit of guidance there, but that's really what I'm kind of stuck in right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you founded a nonprofit, and I could project wildly here because you're passionate about a cause and you care
mm-hmm.
deeply about this, and you're preparing an event or putting up an event. And what conditioning is talking to you. You feel the identification and you feel that stuck place where there's expectations, there's frustration, there's a lot of suffering around something that started out from a place of deep caring.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and that's a good process to see, right? That the way we're talked out of having or being in touch with love, with compassion, with what lights us up, is that the attention is on a conversation that's just focused on trying to get us out of being in touch with that.
Right, because it's totally just leading me to want to give up.
That's right, to quit, right? We've been talking
right.
a little bit about this in practice, right, that when we look at ego as a process, we can really look at its attributes and start to recognize it, that everything that ego does leads to quitting something we love so that we don't experience love.
Yeah,
and it's so good to recognize it, right, Jennifer? I project that it's your practice that allows you to go, well, I'm frustrated, I'm focused on outcome, I'm suffering over something that is my passion. And then we stop and get, no, I'm not suffering over something that's my passion. I'm suffering because I'm listening to a conversation that wants to make me suffer rather than be in touch with why I'm doing this.
Exactly. And that's why I've been feeling like sometimes I confuse like the teachings that I'm, you know, bringing myself back to. Sometimes it feels like that is just sometimes to combat the negative self-hate talk that's coming in, you know, and then I'm combating that conversation, which is keeping me almost in the conversation. Like, I remember one time someone was saying, like, you know, you get into the boxing ring with ego and you're never going to win, you know, and that's what it feels like sometimes, is that I use my practice almost to like combat it instead of I don't know. Instead of what I don't know, I guess.
Okay, can you give me an example of that, Jennifer? I think I'm following you, but it would be so helpful for me and for everyone else if you would give me an example of, so you hear a voice in your head that says, gosh, this is so frustrating, I'm so angry with this. And so how do you go up against that?
One of the things I always try and say is it's not about the expectation of the expectation, the result. It's about, you know, the intentions that I'm putting intention, my love and passion into the foundation, you know, and that's what it's about, not the outcome of the event.
And
so
somehow
that
the
I
other,
would consider
it does,
my practice, right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And somehow and the other, somehow, it doesn't. Go ahead. No. I was just going to say somehow the other, that feels like it's a redirect of attention, but it doesn't really, within quotes, solve the problem. It kind of feels, is that it?
Yeah, like it feels like I'm still, like I'm doing it to combat those other voices that are saying, oh, no, it's all about the end result, and if it's not X, Y, and Z, then you fail. And I'm like, no, it's all about, you know, the intention, not the expectation. So I feel like I'm practicing, but it's still leaving me exhausted because I'm still trapped in that conversation, and then I end up, like, literally getting exhausted, and then I run out of energy.
That is such a subtle but such an important awareness that in so you hear a voice, and what you're recognizing is, it's ego versus ego in the ring, and the clue that you have around that is the fact that you don't have energy at the end of it. All of the energy goes to maintaining the conversation rather than exiting the conversation, although from one perspective, it looks like you're practicing by countering that voice.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Like, it's keeping me in the conversation when I want to exit the conversation.
Oh, that is such a brilliant observation. So do you have a sense of, I mean, when you have that insight, is there something that you do differently? How do you practice with that?
I don't know. I don't know that I...
Well, have you tried to, for example, I mean, this is one suggestion. Have you tried to do the two-handed recording exercise with the person who is receiving that message from the voices?
I have done the two-handed, but not with this instance. And I'm saying right now that I think that would be helpful.
Yes, because it's so we often say we need to bring the right tool to the situation in order for us to be able to do the work, right? Because the bad carpenter blames their tools. But there's an interesting way in which redirection of attention is really, really helpful when we know that it's just the karma thing doing its thing again, right? There's nothing there that we need to be looking at. But if redirecting the attention doesn't assist, as you have realized, there might be something more that needs to be exposed and looked at. And often the way we do that is with a two-handed recording. Because there's this person here who's so clearly having a hard time, and she probably needs to be heard at a level where the redirect of attention is not allowing her to be heard.
Okay. So the two-handed would be the, you know, the one with the conditioned voices of that are, you know, and then listening to that and coming back with the place of compassion on the other hand.
Yeah. So the most important part is if you go to that place in you when you hear the voice that says, oh my God, you're trying so hard and it's not making a difference and really, really you should be making more progress, blah, 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 or whatever it is that it says to you. When you hear that, you go to that, something, it lands somewhere. It causes some acute suffering for you when you hear that. Now, what you have been doing is to say, okay, well, you know, I don't need to listen to that voice. I need to focus my attention on the process, not the outcome. But before you do that, whatever that place is which receives that message from the voices, you want to explore that place. What's going on for me? Why does this upset me so much? What is it that's being implied here? Right? If I speak from that place, there's wisdom there that gets unlocked, which will allow you to see something. I don't know what it will be. You'll find out when you do the two-handed recording exercise, and it will probably release a level of energy that's stuck in that place.
That sounds awesome. That sounds good. I think I maybe started to uncover this a little bit earlier, and there definitely was some release that was coming out, but I think that there is more there. So I think that this could be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really so interesting. Yeah, it's so interesting to mm-hmm. see that just turning the attention, like that was just really important to me that you validated that just turning your attention to something else sometimes isn't going to get you out of the conversation, that there might be something else. And that's because if it doesn't get you out of the conversation, that's probably a clue that there's something more there that you need to uncover.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the training, right? So I use this tool, it doesn't work. Not that there's something wrong or practice doesn't work. It's just that I might need to approach it from a different perspective. And which is the tool that will work here, because I'm really, really interested in seeing and seeing through whatever's going on in this situation.
And then just having, once you hear, go to that, when the voice is hearing and releasing that energy, then you go to the other hand recording and you come from the place of the mentor, the compassion back to that, right?
Yes, and you'll be completely surprised by what the right hand says and what the left hand responds. You know, it's totally surprising because it's so beyond the conditioned process, right? The conditioned mind can't even imagine what's going on underneath. And so the reason to do the two-handed exercise is simply to do both the hands is simply that oftentimes the expression in the right hand may get hijacked by ego. And so you really want to be able to hold that experience from the place of compassion. In other words, make the movement to compassion regardless. So that's one reason to always do it in the two-handed way. And the second reason is much more subtle in that, it completely went away. Let me see if it comes back. That when you're using the right hand, oftentimes you talk long enough that you get disidentified, right? Some awareness takes over and you stop being the person having the experience and you become the practitioner somebody else who's disidentified from that experience. And so if we don't complete the left hand, there's a subtle way in which the person stuck in that suffering place was rejected twice. Because she never got heard. Somebody disidentified, but she never got heard. And the left hand makes sure that that person gets heard and doesn't get rejected again or excluded again.
Great. Thank you so much. That makes a lot of sense. And it's always just the way that I feel like the universe supports you when you hear something talking about, that the check-in was just, I don't know, just really speaking to me so much on this and then to get in the queue when I didn't expect to be. So thank you so much for your support and the Sangha and the support of the universe. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for all of that. It's such an amazing process, that synchronicity that you're pointing to, right? And so keep us posted, Jennifer. Let's see how it goes. And maybe call
thank
back
you.
To Dr. Sherry or anyone, someone else who's facilitating the show soon. Because we all want to know.
Okay. Well, great. And I look forward to seeing everyone when the year-long retreat starts again, because I miss everybody. So I look forward to that.
Okay. Take care, Jennifer.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. And Ashwini, I love that. What I heard in that conversation is the need, the two-handed recording, need from the right hand and the suffering, and then there's that opportunity to meet that with compassion, especially for the human who has founded this nonprofit and has this wonderful idea to share with the world and getting the support for that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Right on. Yeah. Yeah. And there's such a level of compassion in willing to do that, willing to do what would support her too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Great. And we have another caller, Ashwini.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Pasha. Can you hear me well?
Hey, Pasha.
Hi, Pasha.
Oh, hi.
Loud and clear.
Okay, great. So I'm staying with my commitment of staying with practice no matter what. Yeah, and also putting myself in the queue, even if I check with the voices, they would say I have nothing to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Only they are allowed to say something, right, Pasha?
Yes, if I would go into the conversation. But what happens in my practice, I'm going through courses of which, I don't know, from outside look like a seasonal depression or something that is kind of synchronized with the weather somehow and affects my mood. and then I start to believe in that to the degree that I kind of go along with that, and then with the help of people outside that they notice, and I realize that this is the time when Pasha needs more support, and. And I remember the tools and the things that help me in that. And I get up and start moving and running and going for a yoga class and going for a run and staying with the practice. Even there is such a pull to go, like, dive into depression.
Yes, yes. So what I hear you saying is there's a way in which you are, so your commitment is to stay with practice no matter what. And you notice a pattern, right? There's awareness of a pattern that when the weather gets dark or whatever the weather's doing, then there's a pull. You're vulnerable to the pull of the voices to drag you into depressing. And so...
Yeah.
Fortunately, you've set up your life that there are people who notice and can support you to say, hey, Pasha, what's going on? And what that does is triggers your commitment to stay with practice no matter what, even though the pull to depressing is so much. And that what you do is, okay, well, I notice this pattern. I know what the voices are trying to do to me. So what my response is going to be is to start to move. It's to start to do the things that take care of me rather than go with the depression.
Yes, and another thing is there used to be...
And Pasha, before you say that, just to that, what a practice success, isn't it?
Yes.
What an amazing thing to celebrate.
Yes, I'm actually in kind of unusual new place in my life because usually this time is well paired with addictions that come along and start take pressure away from practice. And my practice is not to go along with addiction and addictive behaviors, but also kind of double down on the support. So one is recording and listening, and and there is a lot of recordings that I have, and also I'm making recordings just kind of as a scientist observing this. Well, what is this going on? You know, what is it I'm noticing? What are those little things, minute details of this interesting human state where he is susceptible to such a cons, to such a conversation that obviously leads him to suffering?
That's so brilliant. Right, the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, right? That place of, instead of just, so it to me, right, Pasha, that attitude of Sherlock Holmes or a scientist that Sherry often encourages is a perspective that's already disidentified, right? Because you can't be in it in order and be the scientist. You have, in order to observe the phenomena, you already have to be outside of it. So it's a clever way to train ourselves to be in the perspective of awareness and looking at what's going on. And it's a fascinating process because the process is the outcome, right? That you're engaged in fascination, not in depression, and you're training in disidentification rather than giving into the identification. It's such a win-win practice strategy.
Yes. And what I noticed is very hard to be depressed. You know,
very hard to be depressed.
Yes, and also I see this sparks of energy and sparks of enthusiasm in the middle of the depression that placed me in this such a kind of odd state. Like, wow, this is not depressive at all. This is exciting and interesting, and I am with the mentor who is full of, you know, wisdom and things to support that I can just tap in right now. And I'm surrounded by them when I'm listening to past recordings.
Mm-hmm. So let me clarify that, Pasha. What you're saying is, depression would be a hard place to be if you're depressed, right? It's not it's a dark room kind of experience. But what you're recognizing with this approach is it's not. It's actually a full energy experience because all of that energy of life that would have been depressed by listening to voices wanting to depress your energy is actually now available to life. And despite what the weather is doing, there's energy available, and you're surrounded by that in your recordings.
Yes, exactly.
It's a completely different reality.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm kind of in between. I can step a little bit to the left, and I see the depression, and I step a little bit to the right, and I see that sparkle of energy. So I'm right at the edge of... I'm at the doorstep to the dark room, and I'm in just step away to the light room, and and I see there is a freedom, and there is support of practice, and practice walks even in such a places. So that's what's amazing for me. And,
it is amazing.
Yes, and thank you for the support of the show. And I'm also looking forward to our daily radio show. And I just went to my San Francisco sitting group, which is also very supportive. So, yes, I'm staying with practice. Thank you, Praxis.
Well, thank you, Pasha. Ego doesn't have a chance if you're supporting yourself with that much support, right? And that's your experience, that even in that razor, yes. it's truly a razor's edge. You step a hair's breadth and you're in the dark room, and you step in another hair's breadth direction and you're in the light room, and it doesn't matter. Even if that balance is so precarious, if we surround ourselves with practice, we're supported in staying with our heart's intention, right? It's that science. It's like, I don't care what the outcome is, but I'm so interested in the process that I'm watching myself walk this tightrope. There's such a tremendous awareness that's there.
Yes, and I start to lose interest of how I feel. You know, like, I don't care if I feel depressed. I know what to do, and I know in which direction is the light room. So, like, you know, what matters? You know, it doesn't matter. It's for the next step to take, I can just take that next step. So I'm very grateful for practice.
Yeah, such a powerful insight. That the ability to recognize that there's faith in knowing what you're doing, what you need to do, that it really doesn't matter. You lose interest in how you feel, and the next step is available for you to take. And you don't have to drag in the depression with that next step.
Exactly. Yes. Well said. Thank you so much. Gasho.
Thank you, Pasha. Gasho. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. That was an inspiring conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And Ashwini, we are going to hear from our coaching program, and then we'll be back to talk to more callers.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Build compassionate discipline into your life with Zen Awareness Coaching. Weekly calls and email check-ins provide support and accountability for waking up and ending suffering. Coaching assists us to recognize conditioned patterns and direct attention to what we want for our lives instead. If you have ever attended a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, Zen Awareness Coaching is for you. To request a coach, email zenawarenesscoach@livingcompassion.org. Get a Zen Awareness Coach and choose to make a change for good for your practice and your life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael and Ashwini, it's Anne calling from the Bay Area.
Hi,
Anne. Hey, Anne. Hey. I hope you guys are doing great. I'm doing great. I was calling because I was inspired by a caller last week, and then I was listening to the report on the Africa program, and I got so inspired by that. So I'm just feeling very inspired.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a great place. It's great, isn't it, that when we surround ourselves with people practicing, we land in a place of inspiration.
Yeah, and when I was listening to Shri Devi talk about the girls in college and how Teresa's calling them and checking in on them, seeing how they're doing, and the ones that are new have ones that have been there for a while supporting them, and I thought, wouldn't it be great to be in a place where you have that much support? And then I thought, wow, we're all in that place because we're all part of Sangha.
Yeah, we're all part of Sangha. That is that web of interconnectivity, right, and continuity.
Yes, yeah, to realize that we have that support available to us, and what egocentric karmic conditioning wants to do is make each of us feel separate and alone and not supported. But the only thing that keeps us from being supported is listening to that voice.
Exactly, listening to that voice and not avail. So in two levels, right, that you're pointing to, one, we feel separate and alone, and so we don't recognize that we are in support. And the second is that we realize we're in support, but we're talked out of availing ourselves of that support.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and I feel so supported because I was in the situation where I didn't get an email that got sent out to people, and somebody actually followed up and said, "We haven't heard back from you," and I just felt so supported because I didn't get the email, so that's why I hadn't heard back from me, and it just felt like such an amazing feeling, like, you know, I'm going to be caught if I fall or if something happens. There's that the mm-hmm. practice support that is holding us all.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that we're being sought, sort of the spiritual message in it, right? That we feel lost, but that doesn't mean that we're not sought, and something isn't looking for us.
Yeah. And the thing that inspired me last week from the radio show was somebody was calling in with a practice success, and mm-hmm. I thought, wow, you know, usually I will call in if I have a problem or there's some issue to solve, and I realized I wanted to call in and just to say how incredibly supportive the kickoff day was for me and how mm-hmm. it has stayed with me, and I am still practicing with it, and of course we're going to be practicing with it all year. But it's been such an inspiration for me, so I wanted to say thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's such an important point you're making, right, Anne, that the Sangha is not just a receiver or support for when something is wrong, that really we're a circle of celebration also, that there's such a value to call in and say what it is that's been working or successful, because it is the Sangha that mirrors that for us. Because conditioning won't mirror that for us. There has to be a place that we offer that in order for it to be received, amplified, and reflected back.
I love that. Sangha is a circle of celebration. That's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's funny. So go ahead.
No, go for it.
Oh, no, I was just going to say it speaks to...
Now I've forgotten what it speaks to.
So it's obviously your turn, Ashwini. I'll think of it. Yeah. You go.
Well, we were just looking at it in group at Center recently about how the two-handed recording exercise is often only done when you're mm-hmm. in a state of acute suffering. But to do the two-handed mm-hmm. when you're in happy is such mm-hmm. a different experience that life does want to celebrate life. It's such a different mm-hmm. process to for compassion and love to witness success.
Yes, and I remembered what it speaks to. It speaks to the focus of our attention, right? Because I can either focus on what's not working or I can focus on what is working. And there's just such, I mean, it's just astounding to me. I mean, like just like the peace quote that came in today and the tweets that came in today. And I'm just there was this amazing tweet this morning about make mistakes today and see what happens. And I was just like, mm-hmm. that is such a great tweet, you know? And then the quote from Sherry today from the Daily Peace quote. I mean, all of the practice support, it's just so phenomenal. And I'm just so grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and to speak to that place of the Sangha as a circle, right, and that mm-hmm. we're supported by practice, we want to offer our gratitude for the practice that supports us. We're in that process of inspiration and gratitude when we're doing it, right? And so there's a way in which it's important to do that because we want to train to be able to out-conditioning through compassion, mm-hmm. and we also want to be able to celebrate life in life.
Yes.
And Sangha is the place mm-hmm. to do that.
Yeah, and what that reminds me of is, you know, it's when we're in the light room, it's important to remember that we can be in the dark room, right? Mm-hmm. And we're in the dark room, it's important to remember there's the light room. So, yes, this is all good practice for when those voices are pounding and I believe them or, you know, I get identified, all of that. So, yeah, it's just very good, and also I'm really realizing, as somebody else mentioned, how I feel like I'm in withdrawal from our daily calls. So that's another reason I wanted to call in.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, good news. We're counting down to
May
Exactly. I can't wait. So I will let somebody else get on, but I just wanted to call and say thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you for doing that.
Good evening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. Ashwini, what was dropping in during that conversation is that when there's a person in my sphere or in the Sangha who's happy and in well-being, that it's a big support to me. I know that I don't need to see that person. That person becomes a role model for me, especially when I'm caught and struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a way in which we can move to a process of joy, right? A sympathetic joy for that. Whatever's going on for me, I can calibrate to joy anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, especially when I surround myself with practice and I'm immersed in it and I swim in it and there's another call tomorrow and then I have RLB and then there's the group and then there's radio show.
Yeah. A river of joy.
Yes. And we have another call here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini and Michael. This is Chrissy from North Carolina.
Hey, Chrissy.
Hey. Wow, it's been a long time since I've called. So I'm really glad to get on. And I'm a little nervous, but I really just want to take a moment to thank you for this show because it has just transformed my life. It just brings me back to center every day when I listen to the archives, and I'm just so grateful. So much wisdom to tap into.
it is, isn't it? Yeah.
It really is. So quickly, I know we're at the end of the show, but I've been looking at how conditioned mind is having I'm having a conversation about in my mind about how others in my life, such as a friend or a family member, kind of don't follow up with me the way I do them, or, you know, I guess conditioning is expecting a reaction, a more kind, a considerate reaction from others, and feeling like I'm, you know, not getting that, and then like every single day, there's a conversation about it. When I, you know, when this person comes to mind or I see it on, you know, social media, I see this person and I don't act out of, you know, what conditioned mind tells me to do. You know, conditioned mind says, well, you need to get back at this person by not responding or, you know, and I never do that, but there's always this like pull, you know, this conversation that they need to see, you know. That's what they're doing. They're not being as considerate, and everything has really helped me. By the way, in the show, like I, you know, what I've heard has been very helpful.
Let me ask you this, Chrissy: what is it that you would get if they got back to you?
You mean the way that conditioning says they should?
Certainly when you know, it's really interesting when we see, when we look at the process in ourselves, right? Because we can't affect what they do. But clearly this is something that conditioning can do to you and get your attention around. It's a charged place. And so it's talking about, well, they're not like that, or, you know, they should be like that, or they're not like the way you are, or whatever it is that conditioning is talking about. If our attention is on that process, we're never going to get to the root of the problem, right? Because the conversation is only about, okay, well, and I see that person on social media, and immediately the story starts, right? And then most of your attention, because you're a practitioner, goes to how can I drop that conversation? But even if I drop that conversation, as we were talking about with Jennifer, it comes up again. The story comes up because you randomly see that person on your screen and the story starts to build up and there's a lot of energy about that, right? And so the exploration is to, the answer is not in the story, but the story gives us a clue. So there's something about not getting back to someone that is painful. When when someone doesn't get back to you, what do you feel? What does it mean?
It's interesting because conditioning goes back and forth. The voices will say that it's because I maybe am not connected enough with them. And then it says, oh, but they just don't care. You know, they don't, they're not concerned with you. Or they're mad about, you know, something.
Yes. Yeah. So ultimately something you did, right? There's something wrong with you. You aren't connected to them because if you were connected enough to them, they would be, they. So in other words, if you could be more connecting, more lovable, more whatever, then they would give you whatever, love, respect, and response. So the problem really is there's something wrong with you.
And, I can see that.
And I think, Chrissy, it would be wonderful to just explore this again with a two-handed recording exercise because something you said earlier was really important. You were disappointed. You know? There's a way in which how practice gets used against us is if this conversation is going on in conditioned mind, then I don't get to have the experience that I'm having. It's what we were talking about with Jennifer about redirecting attention, right? You're allowed to be disappointed. You're allowed to be disappointed. I did something really nice, and it wasn't acknowledged. Now, it could not have been acknowledged because that person was identified or that person forgot, or it didn't mean that they didn't care about you. It's just not their way of doing whatever. But the fact that you didn't receive what you wanted and you were disappointed is something to accept. But if we go off into, oh, well, conditioning is saying this and voices are saying that, you skip the part about the of the human being who's trapped there and is rejected because, you know, in some ways she's having that experience twice. Oh, well, I didn't get what I want and I'm feeling disappointed and my disappointment is not acceptable.
Yeah, that conversation you're talking about really resonated with me because of what you're saying. Yeah, just acknowledging that disappointment with the mentor and and getting some compassion for it and
And the reason to do that is because when you acknowledge that disappointment and really explore that place, what you do is move to that position of a mentor from which you can give yourself what that external person is not giving you, which is what conditioning uses against you, right? Because ultimately we get to the place of we need to be unconditionally loved and accepted. That's what I'm looking for from that other person. I did this gesture for you out of a deep sense of love. I'm projecting here. I don't know if that's your experience, but I love you, which is why I'm doing this for you. And if you don't reciprocate, somehow or the other, you're signaling to me that you don't love me, or at least that's what the conditioned interpretation is. And what we do in practice is to get to the place of having all that love, being to give ourselves all of that love, because we certainly don't get it from the voices, and whether or not we get it out from external sources is really unpredictable based on the level of identification someone else is going through. So there's a way in which I have to know how to make her feel appreciated because that's what she's looking for. And the only thing that can make you feel appreciated is the unconditional love of the mentor.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I just need to, I would love to get to the place where I can speak you know, have that conversation every day with a mentor. I have a lot of resistance come up when I try to do the two-hand recording, but I have. You know, I know that I have experienced it and have received the wisdom, and I just need to do the exercise, you know.
Because what we know intellectually and cognitively, that the only thing that's going on here by you not doing it is the maintenance of that karma, right? The conversation can keep happening, and you can keep going to the suffering place, and that person keeps getting rejected. And the person, mm-hmm. the identity of not being appreciated is what keeps getting maintained. And so perhaps, I don't know how you support yourself in doing that, maybe a sticky on your computer or something, but as soon as you hear that conversation happen in your head, you know, that person did not get back to me or whatever it is, you pick up the recorder and try to do the two-handed recording in that moment. And if there's tremendous resistance, you would want to talk about the person who's feeling tremendous resistance, not the person who's feeling disappointed, as a way to get to the person who's feeling disappointed, right? Because as Jen said, the portal to the other side is whatever your experience is now. So if resistance is what you're experiencing, start the two-handed recording with the resistance. Because clearly, what's going on there? It might just be pure ego, or someone might be scared, or someone might be upset, or whatever. You never know what you'd find out. And so it's that, okay, I'm going to get past the assistance to do the two-handed recording exercise so that I can get to the person who's disappointed. By the time I get to the end of that conversation, we're gone.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, totally. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Thank you for that.
It's what Anne was saying, right, that we really need to touch in for our process to be reflected enough to get clarity on what the next step might be.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for taking my call, and I will
Don't
do that.
Don't be a stranger, Chrissy.
I won't be a stranger.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, hope to see you in North Carolina in April.
Yes, I plan on it. So I'll see you then.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Okay. You take care.
Okay, thank you. Okay, you too. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Chrissy. Ashwini, I was especially appreciating the willingness to go deeper. And the sense, as you were talking, as Jen talks about also, that the portal is whatever's here in front of me now. And so if there's to doing the recording, that's what I speak to first. And then as Chrissy was talking about, underneath that is the disappointment and how can we bring the compassion to the human through that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also layered.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And Ashwini, we are 2 minutes away from the top of the hour here.
Well, I would not call it, Michael, because 2 minutes is insufficient time for any length of a practice conversation. So how about we just say good night? Yeah.
For all of these deep thinkers in Sangha, 2 minutes is okay. So thank you so much for being here tonight, and thanks to everyone who participated. And we look forward to talking with everyone next week.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Go happy.
Go happy.